true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I was saying before we were on mic, so I'll say it again, that I'm so happy to make Desmond happy again. Or to be able to make Desmond happy again. I know you're hearing this.
Woohoo! Yeah!
It's a possibility. You're not responsible for his feelings, but shut up.
Yeah, I just mean like it's going to be such a nice audio. I'm so excited.
Man, yes.
We have like a very exciting guest today because he's going to do our charts.
Yeah.
For us astrologically. And he's going to look at our transits, like what's happening now. And he knows the date of when I almost died of lightning striking recently. He's like, tell me the lightning strike date. And I'm like, okay. So he's going to tell us about whatever fucking transit bullshit was happening then.
Nice. I see his name now on the email, and he is someone, he's a Sacramento actor, right?
Yep. And he's a Bay Area actor. He did Angels in America at Berkeley Rep.
That's right. Never met the guy, but I know who he is. I've seen him. I know his face.
And get this crazy twist. We'll probably talk about this when he comes on, but he knows, oh God, did we have Clea on the podcast?
No, you keep thinking we had Clea on the podcast.
Okay. So Clea's husband was in that production. They're New Yorkers.
Uh-huh.
Clea's husband was in that production of Angels in America in Berkeley, and so was Ben. And so Ben knows Clea, and I know Clea. And that was across the country, and weird that that happened. The end.
And we'll probably have to have Clea on the show, it sounds like, too, because you keep talking about
clearly.
Her as though she was on the show.
Right? Oh, wait. Can we do a thing? Okay, this is for all my ASMR peeps.
Oh, yeah.
I listen to ASMR every night now before I go to bed on TikTok.
Nice.
And that's one of the things they do.
Now, I couldn't hear that on Zoom, but that's because Zoom is stupid and cuts out weird noise like that.
But I bet the recording will pick it up. Yeah, this is a real good sound. It's one of my favorites when I'm listening.
Yeah.
I remember I used to give ASMR shit because I was judgmental and rude. And now I'm like, God, I love ASMR.
Do you get the scalp tingles or anything from it? Do you get like a rush of energy?
Yeah, for me, it's less scalp tingles and more... It hits, okay, different triggers do different things, but the ones I like the most are the ones they go right to the center of my brain and shut something down.
Oh.
Like kind of in the way that alcohol does. If you drink alcohol or you meditate, you just go into like beta or alpha or something, you switch into a different state and your mind goes, boof.
It's gamma, but that's cool, whatever. I don't know.
You are so full of shit. Anyway, so it's like I'm listening and a lady's like putting foam on a microphone and instantaneously it's like power down, Katie Rubin. And certain other ones give sexual arousal immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Certain other ones give like a kind of a power down sexual arousal, tinglies all over the body combo.
Mm-hmm.
So it just like totes depends.
Do you have any that aren't the obvious ones, like fingers on a chalkboard, which is like that hurt? But are there any that you'd think would be fine, but are actually like, no, that like send jolts? I can't think of any examples, but I have definitely sounds, ASMR type sounds that jolt me, like make all my sphincters go hink, 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 you know.
Like what? Oh, God, what's
an
example?
I'm trying to think of an example. I feel like some of the ones that, you know, like, oh, you're, you know, putting your hand in a bunch of M&Ms. Oh, that feels good. Or you're doing, and then someone will like do like, maybe it's like scraping the microphone, but that didn't get me. So, but it would be the equivalent of just like one that would be, I wish I could think of an example.
One that would be nurturing for some people, for you,
but
sends
it makes
you.
Makes me go, hey! Yeah, almost
weird.
Like nauseous. Yeah. I mean, definitely that happens. I think we've talked about it before, but it's because of the association of different alarms on my phone. Very, like do 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 do, very calming energetically.
Yeah.
But when I run through them to like decide on the alarm sound,
yeah,
it goes do do ah do do hana hana no, like my whole body just like seizes up around it. But I think that's the association.
Well, it you think, is it?
Maybe.
Because I wonder.
Or maybe it's that it's electronic.
Because the association, wouldn't that just be a mental reaction you'd have as opposed to like...
Yeah, and it goes straight into the body.
Yeah. So that sounds like those sounds just fuck with you.
Yeah. A lot of the soothing alarm noises on my phone do it to me.
Interesting. So Ben's going to tell us about astrology, which is rad, and all about our individual shit about it. And I just got back from Jacksonville, Florida. I've had like all the social events since I've been back. Squeezle the dog has gained 45 pounds from our travel. She's super chubby, just like me right now. Because like when we travel, she has this very particular food that she eats, and it's too fancy and complicated to travel with because I have to like do stuff and put it in ice, and it's a whole fucking thing. So instead, I'm just like, sure, Starbucks cheese in the morning. You like cheese? So she's just, and my dog, for whatever reason, gains her weight in her neck only. Neck chub. Boom. Right in the neck. So she's just like a huge neck now. And I'm like, every time I see her, I'm like, I'm killing my dog slowly. I'm just like cardiovascularly murdering her with fat on her neck. Or am I? Like, does fat actually kill? Because here's my latest question, or something that my therapist told me. She told me that the thing we all believe, she said, recent research shows that, and she said this with all the authority in the world in her tone, there is no actual correlation between being overweight and cardiovascular disease. That we've just been sold that bill of goods. She said, actually, as people age, it's less healthy if they're very, very thin, because most diseases are diseases of wasting away, like getting, not having enough padding on your body or whatever. And I was like, there's no correlation between heart disease and weight gain? Like, that's a bold statement. And she's making it because part of her specialty in her whole career therapeutically has been eating disorder and body image stuff and helping women like deprogram from you have to be thin ideas, right? But I'm still like real, real not convinced that that's true. What do you think?
I'm not a medical doctor, but I'm just wondering if there's a language thing. And it's more that there is no automatic correlation between heart disease and obesity, that there's an assumed correlation that, well, if you're fat, you have heart disease. And that is patently untrue. That's you know, people have assumptions about all different types of body, too fat, too skinny, too this, too that. And they always say, oh, well, I'm concerned about your health. But they actually aren't, because they actually aren't inquiring about the actual health, because some people are just large, fat, and healthy as hell.
Yeah.
Some people are very skinny and very unhealthy.
Yeah.
So it's not actually, there's no automatic correlation. Now, there may be that like, oh yeah, that person had a heart attack and they were incredibly overweight in a way that their body was not actually healthy with. And that, so there was a correlation between that, those two things.
For that individual.
For that individual, but that the automatic correlation of weight and heart disease, it's the same as so many things. Like, yes, a lot of, you know, I don't know, a lot of people of a certain ethnicity do a certain thing, but that doesn't mean that all people of that ethnicity do that certain thing.
Hmm.
You know, and it sometimes those things are physical, sometimes those things are behavioral, but it's an assumed correlation that is not at all automatic.
She was saying something bolder than that. I think she was saying there's literally no link between cardiovascular disease and obesity. I'm gonna ask her this week, and I'm gonna come back next week and say words, because that feels like such a bold claim that, like, A, how could you make it? You're not a doctor, and like you're.
Would you? What if someone had said there is no link between cardiovascular health and being extremely skinny? There's no link.
Well, you're right. That doesn't make sense. I've actually seen people die of that when I went to treatment.
Oh, okay. So that's my point. Is like, yeah, right. There is correlation on all points of the spectrum.
Right, but not necessarily.
But not necessarily any of the points of the spectrum.
All right, that's interesting. Okay. Like for some people, what we're saying is for some people, being overweight, being obese, whatever words we want to use, would cause heart disease. But for some people, not.
Right.
Yeah.
Welcome to Health Chat with Cass and Katie.
Hey, man, it's all fair game.
Everything we talk about.
Now I'm worried she has a bright red spot on the back of her neck. Why? Her neck is huge because I've been just shoving lard down her throat for 2 weeks.
It may just be, honestly, if it's a bit of a fold, that it's just new skin that's getting irritated because it's rubbing against itself because it's a fold that wasn't there before.
I made you so big, huh?
So, you know.
My dog walker here in Beacon keeps being like, she cuter that way. She's a nugget. We like it. There's nothing wrong with it. And my neighbor down the hall is like, she's just thick. It's good. Like
with two C's.
Yeah, some people like it. I'm just actually worried about her health. But if there's no causation, right. If there's no correlation, then...
If it's not actually interfering with her life, then it's fine. But if it is, like if it's causing her irritated skin and because of the neck rolls, then that's something to look at.
Yeah. All right. We're going to the VET in the next couple of days. But it doesn't feel like an emergency. It feels like, all right, we need to ask some questions.
And as you mess with it, she doesn't go,
No.
It's fine. You're fine. It's not infected. It's just, like, I have a rash on my elbow. You know, we don't stop the world.
That's your shirt.
Oh, right. Oh, that's, I thought it was underneath the shirt.
No, I'm saying I can't see it because you're not, you're like, look at this. And you're showing me your shirt.
I don't actually have a rash. I often have a rash on my elbow. I don't this moment. It was a bit of a lie. It was to make a point.
I think part of why I'm nervous about it is her behavior has been different in the past couple of days since we got back. But she's very lethargic and weird. And I'm hoping it's just like we fucking drove 18 hours twice and lived in 5 Airbnbs and 3 hotels. So like...
She's just like, let me check out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What's going on with you? What's been happening?
What has been happening? I think it's... Yeah, I got cast in a show. Going to be doing a show. So that's exciting. Thank
what is
you.
It? Wait, don't... Let me guess.
I'm just checking to see if it's okay to say... Yeah, no, nobody cares.
Wait. Down South, John Tracy directing.
That one.
Damn it. I wanted you to not know how I knew, but of course you know how I know.
Of course. Yeah. So, yeah, you knew about all that. Yeah. So.
That's cool. What's the play?
The Play That Goes Wrong, which is what it's called, but it's about a play that goes very wrong.
Okay. And where? TheaterWorks? No.
San Jose Stage.
Oh, fun. I have never worked there.
Yeah. I've done one show there.
Okay.
Yeah. So that will be fun. I'm very excited, but it is worth noting something that we can talk about on our behavioral podcast.
Yeah.
Every person I have mentioned it to says, you know, oh, well, how do you feel? And then I'm like, I'm excited. And they're like, are you? So there's an interesting thing that's been going on where I have noticed that, like, people want me to express my excitement in a certain way, and that's on them. But B, every single person has like looked at me funny, like, well, why aren't you excited?
I was about to.
Yeah.
But I could tell you why. It's about you, actually, because the way you're saying it is so different from how you've ever said it before.
Yeah.
The way you would have said it before would have had this kind of feverish, panicked, excited, I booked a show and I'm fine and it's totally cool. But behind it was this energy of like, I can't wait to do it because I don't have any worth and value until I'm doing it. Whereas now you're like, yeah, booked a show and I'm still me. And that means I have to drive, but it's going to be fun, but it's also going to be reality. Like you seem more grounded about it to me.
I appreciate that perspective. A variant on that perspective is an unwillingness to risk disappointment.
Why would it happen? Why would you get disappointed?
No reason, but that I'm shell-shocked enough at this point in my moment that I'm like, yay, I hope. I think it's good, right? It's good. It's awesome, right?
Right.
When indeed, when I like actually sink into it, no, I'm fucking psyched. But guess I still have a little bit of like held back joy around just like I've been like afraid to have...
Bruised.
Yeah, I've been bruised. And so I'm afraid to have a good thing happen.
I totally get that. I totally get that.
Yeah.
It's like, is it really going to come through?
Right. Or is something about it, you know, and then there's the whole, do you deserve good things thing, you know, and that's my own shit that I think I'm mostly over, but you know, still there.
Sure.
So it is interesting though to notice every single person I mentioned it to has picked up immediately on my not, like, they want me to be fucking high-fiving and dancing a jig. And I'm like, I'm excited. It's great.
Yeah.
And they're like, really? Is it great?
I think it's because they know you. I'm projecting now on them because I would guess it's because they know you and you've always had a very different way of responding when you've gotten a gig. And they're like, where'd that thing go that you usually do?
Yeah.
Which is not a reason for you to do that thing. I'm just saying that may be.
I don't have to dance monkey boy.
No, but that may be why they're reacting that way.
Yeah.
Not because you need to blah, 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 but because they're like, Cassidy would usually blah, blah, blah. And now he's not.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, well, congrats.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's so exciting.
It's very exciting.
How long is the contract? Like,
it's very short. It's only a 7-week total.
Oh.
Which means like 3.5 weeks of rehearsal, 4 weekends run, you know, so they kind of overlap each other.
That's cool.
The rehearsal goes into opening weekend and then 3 more weekends after that, or 3 more weeks after that.
Okay, gotcha.
I think it runs a total of 4, which is just not much. Yeah, but...
That's very cool. Well, I wonder why it's such a short run. Is that just what they do all the time down there?
No, it feels like a week shorter. Maybe...
Maybe like post-COVID, everything's different type deal?
They're just like, we just, you know, if we let it run too long, we run a greater risk of having it shut down. So we just get it in, get it done, get it out.
Maybe, right?
Yeah. And maybe like, you know, maybe there's a built-in extra week if we lose a week somewhere in the middle. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Like maybe they're like, well, we'll tack on that extra week if we have to cancel a week of shows because one of us gets COVID. Which is real. That happens.
Yeah, a lot. So
my show got through its whole run and I was amazed. I was like,
oh, so cool. So happy for you guys. What a relief, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how productions are managing that. Like, I don't know how you guys did that. That was a fucking miracle. Because you're all up in each other's grill. You're in the fucking dressing room. You're fucking...
4 actors, 1 stage manager, 1 director. And then once we got to open to the show, 3 crew, which is very small, you know. And so you're able to isolate that number of people much more easily. There's fewer vectors.
Right. Totes.
And all 4 actors were very much like... You know, one of them was from out of town and he was just staying with his mom. So he was just like, that's it. It was just us and his mom's house.
Yeah.
Sydney lives in a van. Like, she's just living in her space.
Oh, is she full time in it, in the van?
Somewhat.
Or is it more?
When she's here. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, she'll park at someone's house and use their shower. But she lives in that van and she can drive somewhere else and be there that night or whatever.
I am obsessed with that. That also makes her very appealing as an actor to companies.
Yeah. She's just like, just give me a hookup. I just need a place to park, a driveway to park my van in.
Yeah. That's really cool. And also every city in the wherever, you can find some hookup somewhere. It might not be right next to the theater, but.
Right.
That's really cool. Good for her. She's such a badass.
Yeah.
My dog, I have to show you this real quick. Look, she fell asleep with her head in my hand. Do you see that? Her head is up.
Yeah, now you can't move.
I know. And she's just asleep with it. But look at the weird, she woke up. But you see the weird, like she's literally tilting her head back like she's howling. And how are you asleep like that, small dog? I'm putting my hand down now. You have to be a normal canine. I can't do it. good stuff. I guess one other thing I'll report to the team here is... You're gonna wanna judge me. You're gonna judge me. I'm gonna ask you to be kind about the level of judgment and how you express it.
Okay. I can't wait to hear what this is gonna be.
Well, so when I was in Jacksonville, my landlord texted me and was like, hey, so when do you think your lease is up? And I was like, September 15th? He was like, yeah, that's what I thought too. And I was like, when is my lease up, landlord? And he said, August 15th. And I was like, what? Which means I have a month less time to move and out of this place. Did I tell you I'm moving?
I knew that you were talking about it.
Well, like, regardless of where I'm going, I'm leaving this building because I've decided that I want to live somewhere where I can actually save money to buy a house.
Right. You want a little lower rent, even though it's not as awesome a place, maybe.
I want a lot lower rent.
Okay.
Like a lot lower. Because it's... after I, this was a great experiment. I've lived in the lap of luxury for a year. I live above the, all the peasants. You know what I mean? It's, I just, yeah. That's like, it's fancy as fuck here. And it's been great. And I like that. And I can't save a dime living here. Like with my expenses and this rent and paying my credit cards down, there's just literally no savings ever. So I finally got rational somewhat. Or like, my, let's say it this way. My priorities changed. Now I'm like, all right, we have to save some money. So I know that I'm moving. I just have been very, where am I moving to? But before I had really gotten to decide, I had less of a, I have one less month.
It's a lot.
Now, he did say to me,
it's like 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, it's not even. Yeah. He did say to me that he's like, hey, I thought the same thing. So if you need an extra week or two, we can be flexible. But the deal, the bummer is I've already paid him through August 15th. So I'm like all paid up if I don't stay longer.
And that's good.
It's real good. So, and my deposit that he's giving me back is a lot. I paid way too much deposit to move in here. So I'm pretty motivated to get the fuck out in a very short amount of time because I never have to pay him again and he has to pay me.
Okay. So now you just got to find a place. But are you going to find a place in Beacon?
We're going to do an ellipsis to this story. And next week I will reveal to the listening audience.
TBD.
What kind of judgments you can project onto me at that time.
Fair enough.
Will you judge me for... You'll have options for what to judge me for.
I don't know why I would judge you for a necessitated situation that you...
No, not that. That's not why you would judge me.
Oh, you're not even telling me about the judgy part.
Right. You may judge me based on choices I may make about where I might go.
You're going to Jacksonville.
I'm saying no words at this time. I'm just telling you, you may judge me. Maybe it's... What if it's weirder than that?
You're going back to Colorado.
What if it's weirder than that?
You're coming back to California.
What if it's weirder than that?
You are moving to the planet Nihor.
How did you know?
You have become a Mormon and you're the god of your own planet.
I'm marrying three different men at the same time.
Nice.
Wouldn't that be nice if there was one fucking religion where bitches had like 90 husbands? Let's
Makes
make
sense.
That happen.
Ben Ismail is here in the waiting room.
Let's bring his ass in.
Let's
Jesus
bring
Christ.
His ass in. Bring him in. Ben, are you with us?
I am.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's good. How are you?
Good. Welcome aboard the ship of crazy.
I love crazy.
Squeezle's here. She's excited for you. She's in a weird position, if you can see.
We've got a big dog behind Ben.
Oh, hi, buddy. Hi, Tanda Pup.
What a handsome sauce.
I just have a gray wall behind me. It's just a fabric, my self-tape shooting background right there.
Love it.
Not as fun.
Not near as fun.
So Ben and I were bonding recently about the fact that I was just complaining to him as we were scheduling this for today about driving from, you know, Florida to New York. And he was like, homie, I drove from Florida to California several times. And I actually wanted to ask you, Ben, and you can tell the listening audience, like, why were you doing that? Just a little background on you, because I think it's a good intro to who you are to all of us.
Sure.
And also, like, how many times did you go back and forth?
Oh, dear God. So it started because I was in California and I was an actor, director in very much the lane that y'all are in or have been in. And I was working with a company down in Florida, and it's actually where I ended up meeting my husband. But I still had a bunch of, you know, networks and contacts and stuff up here. And I kind of, like you have been talking about, Katie, I don't like to fly. It's not my jam. So I decided to drive. And I don't even know how many times I ended up doing it.
Was it because you were going out there to do a show and then you'd finish the show and come back home? Or was it like...
At first, yes. But then I like, okay, well, let's have you come down and do a whole season here. And I was like, okay, great. And then I got a, you know, 6-month contract to do Angels in America at Berkeley Rep. And I was like, well, so I guess I'm going to go back, but I'll come back. And so I ended up going back and forth, I think, I don't know, maybe 6 or 8 times over 3 years or something. Yeah.
That's a lot.
It was It was a lot.
Okay, question.
Yes.
Did you take which, you must have taken every route.
I took a lot of routes. I did.
Oh, I need to know, because I've done this drive a bunch too.
Yeah.
Did you go south? Did you go north? Did you go through the middle? How did you do it? What's your favorite?
I usually went south just because it was the quickest. And I'm like originally from Memphis. And so it was a nice way to like stop through homelands and things and, you know, reconnect with all that. But, you know, the middle road is really nice too, because you get some really beautiful scenery as long as you don't like Grace Kelly off the side of the Rockies.
You go, where does it take you through the middle route? Takes you through which states-ish?
It's through like Colorado and Missouri. And I mean, even within the middle route, you can sort of go a couple of different ways there.
Yeah.
The easiest by far is to just do like 40 all the way and go all the way across in the south.
Right. And then you go up in California.
And then you go up. Yeah. And you go up California.
You take the 5 or whatever. Okay.
Yeah. Or the 99 for a while. And then I ended up on the 5. But yeah, again, that was to like, I lived in the Central Valley for a hot minute. And so to sort of catch those friends and stuff too was the main reason I did that.
Where in the Central Valley?
Modesto. Fabulous, beautiful Modesto.
Why?
Like,
I understand like people being from Modesto, but like, why would someone who left a place be in Modesto for a little while?
Well, as I mentioned before, I grew up in Memphis. So anything California is very exotic and fancy to somebody that has
okay
flat Western Tennessee. But when I was in college, my first like serious boyfriend, he lived in Modesto. And so I would go on off time from school. I would go to visit him instead of going back to Memphis very often. So had a lot of, again, a lot of people there, a lot of networks there. So
that's cool.
Nice. Now, Ben, I don't think we've actually met, although I know who you are, but I don't think we met.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't see you in Angels in America, but I did see you during Angels in America because I went and saw Bob perform on the off night. And I think you were in that.
I was in that. Yeah, I was in that show. Yeah, I was his nurse in that show.
So I didn't get to see Angels in America, but I went and saw Bob the Drag Queen, who was also in Angels in America with Ben. And they were doing Bob's show at the Oasis, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that was the high art. So you got to see the real deal art.
Yeah, I got to see the real deal. I was a big fan of Bob's at the time. I went with and it was right before we broke up. Like literally, like it was a peak moment. Like we saw that show, and I remember posting on Facebook literally just the words, "I am so happy right now." Like that was my experience seeing Bob, and it was so fun, and I was in a show at Cap Stage at the time. We were in rehearsal for a show at Capitol Stage, and then went back home, went back to Sacramento in rehearsal, and we broke up.
Oh.
Like over phone. It was like, what happened? So that's what I associate you with, Ben. Sorry.
Oh, well, I think I saw you in, was it the Thanksgiving play?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think I saw you in that. Yeah.
We probably met back after the show and said hi at some point.
I'm sure this world is tiny.
Tiny.
So, okay, just for the listeners too. So Ben's an actor, obviously, and a director, and has his own company also in Sacramento called
Big Idea Theater. No longer me, but yeah, I ran it for like 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben ran Big Idea for a bunch of time but also is an astrologer of note and works at a crystal shop. Tell us what else you do. I can't say words.
I don't think it's a foreign concept to y'all to do 700 different things, but I run a store in Sacramento called Display California, which is like a holistic lifestyle shop, all the woo-woo things in the store, trying to do it from an approachable place for somebody that maybe isn't, they're just woo-woo curious maybe, and they need an easy way in. They don't know where to start in some of the other shops. So, and we work with all California makers and designers to keep it super local and shop small. So I do like business development with those entrepreneurs, and I run the store, and I do my astrology out of there. So it's been really great. You know, a part of a bigger organization, which is a community development group called Unseen Heroes. So they do a lot of events and again, business development kind of things with the local community.
So the Unseen Heroes, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
They are sort of an umbrella organization that has this store under it.
Yeah, so I'm the retail arm of the whole sort of project. So there's event, and there's, you know, we've got a restaurant that we just opened.
Huh.
So we got a restaurant. We got all these different things. It's not our restaurant. It's Rashid's restaurant, but it's it does a lot of different community development projects in the area.
And what does Unseen Heroes refer to? What is the?
So the founder, Rashawn Davis, he was had a pretty decent career, I guess, to start with as a MC and like the music biz. And he wanted to lift other people up and not necessarily be the one on stage, was sort of how he, and he turned that MC life into sort of doing that in this business development and marketing lane for people that didn't know how to do it for themselves.
That's cool.
He's the Unseen Heroes, and he hires other people that want to do that same mission of lifting other people up.
So anybody is an unseen hero in theory, like that if you are unseen, I'm going to help you get seen. Is that sort of the idea?
Yeah, definitely. And then we would take you, if you were a business owner, we'd take you on what we call the hero's journey, which is our little like business development path that we work on.
How cool.
And so we make you the hero, and we are the unseen coaches in the background, essentially. Sort of the
that
idea.
Is cool.
Yeah. I love it. I'm so fulfilled. Like after, you know, so many years just solely focused on the theater and like getting the audition culture alone, like of putting your value in somebody else's hands over and over again. Like,
yeah,
to be able to finally be about giving back and really see like an immediate impact in people's lives. I'm just so blessed and lucky to have the job that I do.
That's amazing. How did that all come to pass? Did you, I'm going to make up a narrative. This is what I've already written it in my mind. You finished a show and came back to SAC, and you were like, well, I have all these people in SAC. I'll just like do astrology and maybe do shows. And then you were at a diner and the guy next to you. Yeah. Then I don't know what happened after that.
Yeah. That's not at all what happened.
So what happened?
So one of my really good friends already worked for Unseen Heroes here in Sacramento. And Joelle, who you know is...
Oh, cool.
That's where I've heard of it before, because the farmer's market thing, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes, we started that Midtown farmer's market before they...
I love Joelle.
Yeah, she's great. And so I was actually in Florida at the time. Really kind of in, there was a major astrological conjunction going on in my life, and I was really like re-examining my whole value system and like what I really wanted to do. I just had some really sort of traumatic theater experiences and was like, do I really want to give all of my time and energy to this?
Yeah.
And Joel was like, you know, I've been trying to get you to come work for us forever. You should actually think about it now. And so I did. She really, I think it had been like 4 years or something that she'd been trying to get me to do it. And then it came up, and finally it was just the right timing and everything.
That's so cool. I love that. It's always friends, isn't it? It's like who you know, who you love, who you're.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so great. How awesome. And then I was excited to have Ben on, obviously, because selfishly, well, first of all, I didn't even think he would make this offer, but also I was like, come talk to us about astrology. Tell us things that, you know, I know a fair amount, but you're like neck deep in it. So like, let's learn things. But then Ben was like,
drowning.
And then Ben was like, send me your info and we'll do some stuff. And then when you asked about the date of the lightning event, I was very excited. So we're just thrilled to have you tell us whatever the hell you want to tell us. Like, I mean, about astrology in general for the listening audience or whatever feels relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways to do astrology. I guess we could start with that. And I have a very strong Saturn placement in my chart, and Saturn in astrology is all about like structures and limits and boundaries and rules and tradition. And so I was very attracted to Hellenistic astrology or traditional ancient astrology techniques. And so that's really how I did most of my study and most of my learning was in the Hellenistic tradition for planetary condition and placement and signification and things like that. But then when you get to interpretation and actually working with people on stuff, it's I blend in a bunch of more like the Dane Rudyard humanistic approach, the evolutionary astrology. The whole idea here being is that I don't look at astrology as like the law of fate, that you are doomed to these events and this is your reality and you have no control over it. I think astrology is best used as a, that's not yours. Hey, no, that's not yours. Hudson has my Disney ears now. but astrology is best used as a tool for self-empowerment. One thing that you talk about all the time, Katie, is, or have lately at least, is the sort of polarity of surrender and empowerment. And that's very much how I look at astrology, that rather than telling you like succinct, clear, the Back to the Future almanac, you know, of exactly what's going to happen, it's to like clue you into cycles of human behavior and cycles of inner experience and things like that, so that you can just be more present with those energies and work with them rather than control them, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I was sharing with Cass that, like, you know, I've been into astrology, like I'm an Aquarian, you know how we are, Aquarians.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
say like the most likely sign to become an astrologer is an Aquarius, right?
Yes.
So I've been into it since I could breathe. Like I literally don't remember a moment in my life where I wasn't checking my chart, you know? Anyway, but still I go through moments where I'm like, oh, calm down. How bad could it be my chart this week? Take a breath. And the most recent, and then I get humbled every time by how real the shit is. For example, the lightning day, because before the lightning day, the day I started driving, I hadn't looked at anything astrological. I just was like, we're going to go now. And I just left. And then on day two, I was like, I wonder what the astrology says about me traveling now, like a dumbass looking later. Now it was day two on the drive, and the astrology was like, oh, so don't travel now. It for me, for this was, by the way, in my Vedic chart for Sagittarius, because I'm Sag in Vedic, because they take it off your rising. Anyway,
right.
And so it was like father figures, spiritual leader figures, and long distance traveler ripe for sudden issues, which is precisely what occurred. And then once I got down there and survived that, thank God, I told Cass on the podcast when we were taping it, I was like, welp, I can't leave here until the 17th because I've been re-humbled by the power of astrology, because the 17th was like, okay, now not so much with travel problems. So I stayed way longer than I planned.
Sure.
Because I didn't want to have another fucking lightning death moment.
How was your trip back?
Easy as pie.
Nice.
It was sunny. It was boring as hell. And I was talking to you when I was like, I'm so bored, I have to drink more coffee. But like, no lightning, no weather, no sun, easy, no traffic, easy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. And, you know, Vedic astrology it's got a lot of different nuance and a lot of different stuff to it. And I have so much respect for that system and so little knowledge towards it. All of my stuff is definitely Western. But in Hellenistic astrology, too, you mentioned the Sagittarius, your rising, being more important. And it absolutely is in Hellenistic astrology, too. That's sort of one of the first things that I would tell somebody in a reading, is that you might have an identity crisis when I get into this, because you've been doing sun sign astrology. Every time we say I'm an Aquarius or whatever, we're really saying my sun is an Aquarius, which is the way we've been conditioned through, you know, newspapers and Cosmo horoscopes and things, you know. But
yeah,
the rising sign in traditional astrology is arguably much more important, because it sort of determines where all the different transits and things happen in your life. It lays out the houses, which are the areas of life that things are going to play out in. And I did look at that chart, and I don't know how much you want to get into it, but like,
get into it.
It was.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Rami here. During a heat wave, sound of a fan whirring in the background, I just listened to the episode of All the Answers in which Katie Rubin channeled the spirit of Thich Nhat Hanh. And that was so cool. So cool. However, I got really sad because at one point, they were talking about how the human race was at a choice point. And Katie even said this is something that she didn't want to face. She didn't want to look at it. So the human race is at a choice point, whether the human race needs to choose light or darkness. I'm simplifying, but you know. Well, fuck. I mean, I've seen the human race. I've seen some history. Seen some humans. There are plenty of individual humans that are full of light and, you know, wonder and doing great things. However, I see how humans behave as a larger group. They suck. We suck. And I cannot imagine the larger group of the human race ever as a group choosing the light. I can't imagine that. And so for the message to be, or the, you know, the answer to the question being like, the human race is at a point where it has to choose. I'm like, well, fuck, it's over. Like, we all know what the human race will choose. Anyway, sorry, it's dark. Rami's rules is dark this week. But that is the truth of my feelings at this moment. And so I am sending lots of love and light, fucking light, to all of you. Rami's rules.
It was pretty intense. It was pretty nuanced. I'm going to try to just do the highlights, I guess. But so you were the big thing, of course, was lightning. So if somebody comes to me with a specific question about a certain topic, I'm going to try to zero in on the planet and or sign, but really the planet that carry those significations. So with a lightning storm, I really wanted to look at Jupiter, because Jupiter is, you know, mythologically, that's Zeus who wields the lightning bolt, and also Uranus or Uranus. I was looking at Katie, Uranus.
We're very good friends.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Just look right at my anus. It's fine.
And so Jupiter is all about expansion and freedom and, you know, sort of the opposite of Saturn, you could say. But Uranus is about sort of disruption and shock and chaos, potentially, but in service of betterment is sort of the best way. So like a revolution. One of the mythological figures associated with Uranus is Prometheus, who stole fire from the gods, upset the system of knowledge to give it to humanity, to improve humanity's position. So we are also looking at a very specific time and place. And so I'm going to want to get the most specific points or planets, which would be the ascendant, or what was coming right over the horizon at that moment, and also the moon. And of course, when I pull up these things, it's like the ascendant of the moment is on your natal Uranus at this moment that everything is happening. And the moon is linking your Neptune and psychic intuition and your sense of self and all these things in your first house. So without getting too gobbledygooky, I'll say like the ascendant, it was a shocking moment in your 12th house of trauma, hidden fears, the dark place that you can't see, the things that we can't work on, leading into something in your body, an intuition in your body. And in that first house, as the ascendant moves from the 12th into the first. So it's like those 2 hours there. It's all starting to like go from this lightning storm into your body to make sense for you. That's sort of the idea.
Okay. You literally just described literally what occurred. And let me tell you how. You know about me, you both do, and probably everybody listening, nothing to me goes without being applied to the healing process, which is to say everything is a healing moment and everything outside is a reflection of something inside. Anyway, so immediately when something like this happens for me, I go like, okay, what are we learning? What is this about? What are they, you know? So I get to this hotel and as finally the lightning stops and I get in the room, I mean, I was panicked. I was probably in a straight panic for 2 straight hours. It was awful. But when my nervous system calmed down enough, I was able, there was still enough access that I had to the core fear that got activated. I mean, I was over the top scared about this. I mean, anybody who has lightning strike the same tree twice near them within 20 feet, that's going to freak anybody out. But 2 hours of shaking and fear, it was designed, I believe, to bring up this thing that I've been unable to get at,
yeah,
that has been showing up in the form of fear of turbulence on airplanes. But it only showed up in my mid-30s. And I believe it's this core fear that I couldn't access until it was just up from something scaring me that much.
Yeah.
So then I sat in this hotel room and I did my energy healing and a bunch of EFT tapping into this core fear. And I'm telling you, I have been not the same since.
That's awesome.
Calmer, more centered, more grounded. Everything's different.
And that's an example of using it, right? Not being controlled by the event was going to happen, quote unquote, in astrological terms. But you used it. You did something with it. You empowered yourself in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else. Either that or you just be scared all the time.
Well, and if you are scared all the time, if we don't do the work, these are, like I think I said, it's all about cycles, right? So the opportunity is going to come up again and dealing with it again, or in the past, it's come up before and will happen again. And the way we meet that is the thing we have control over, I guess is what.
That's good. Yeah, absolutely. What about some Cassidy astrology? But before we go to Cassidy astrology, I think for the listener, I want to give, could you give us a little like rundown through your lens of, so because some people don't even understand. So there's houses,
yeah,
and each house has a something. And then when there's a planet in the house, can you just break down the pie chart of?
Yeah, definitely. So if you've seen a horoscope or a chart, a birth chart or a transit chart, like Katie's saying, it's that pie, it's that wheel. And that is essentially a snapshot of the sky at any given moment and place. So it shows you, you know, where all the planets are. Common misconception, I think, for beginners is especially everybody has all 12 signs and all of the planets. They're all somewhere. It's just the uniqueness is all about how they're configured. So the planets represent these sort of archetypal themes. One thing, we're all theater people here. One thing I say is the planets are actors.
Mm.
And so they're here to do a thing.
Mm.
And the houses are the places of life that these things happen. So the themes that the actors are in, the different in the story. And then the sign that is, you know, Pisces, Gemini, Taurus, the sign is the genre or the style of the scene. Is this Chekhov? Is this, you know, a murder mystery? Is this? And so
that's really cool.
And then there's all, you know, sort of nuance into like who, which planets are effective and all this kind of stuff in these different signs and all that. And that's when you might need an astrologer to come help you. But in the Hellenistic tradition, each sign is a house. Different like systems like Placidus, which is what a lot of people have. If you've got the CoStar app, it's probably going to give you Placidus. Different sort of ways to draw the houses. But again, in the ancient tradition, and arguably the first tradition, although some astrologers may come at me for saying that, but the first tradition, it was one sign equals one house. And so if, for instance, your rising sign, like Katie said, is Sagittarius, that means your whole first house is Sagittarius. And the first house, then, it's a place, right? So the whole first house is about the self, about the body, the appearance, the reputation, things like that. And then you move around the wheel and they each have different significations, different areas. The seventh house, marriage, partnerships, significant like business relationships, even just the deep committed partnerships, the other, you know, and so each of these things give you the place to look at whatever's going on in your own life. So like Cass is a, let's see, Libra rising. So he's going to have a different first house than Katie. And so the things that are happening in Libra might be more personally significant for your body or sense of self than whereas Katie's more Sagittarian, if that makes sense. Is that clear? Am I crazy?
Somewhat. So like the houses, in my case, let's just use me as an example to break it apart. My rising sign is what determines my first house.
Right.
In Hellenistic.
Yeah. And then each sign in order of the zodiac is the next house in the line. So a Scorpio comes right after Libra in the calendar. And so that's your second house. And then after that is Sagittarius. So that's your third house.
And where does that double Gemini sun moon thing come into play? It was houses.
Yeah. So you've got, both of you have like very tight solar aspect. The sun and the moon are very close together in both of your charts, which is pretty interesting.
What does that mean or imply?
So Katie's is a little bit, the moon is a little past the sun and Cass's is a little before the sun. Katie in particular, you're in like a Rudyard kind of humanistic interpretation. You're a new moon personality, which is the seedling in a plant analogy. So you've got something to break free from. You've got something to really push out against is sort of your soul's mission. And there's potentially a lot of struggle in that. The seed has to really break through that shell and really struggle to get up out of the ground. But that's what your soul wants to do. Whereas Cass's is in this final moments before, the final moments of decay or wilting, but don't, it's not bad. It's just about knowing what to move on from is a different way of saying that. It's in that balsamic phase, we would say. So it's much more about letting things go. There's a lesson of letting things go is what the soul is trying to do. But Cass, your sun and moon are both in the ninth house. You're talking about Gemini, and that's your ninth house. So that is, so Gemini is very social, it's very able to talk to anybody, change your mode of speaking to meet the person that you're with. And in the ninth house, it's very much about travel and intellectual, higher learning sort of pursuit. Spirituality sometimes lives up here. It's the house of the god element, if you will. But you also have Mercury here, and Mercury rules communication and technology. So those things may be, again, really significant for you because Mercury's where he belongs, doing his thing with both luminaries, like talking and sharing and meeting people where they are intellectually is a huge, huge part of your life, particularly maybe in sharing things, sharing lessons as some sort of teacher or podcast host or something like that might be.
All of the above.
Yeah.
So yeah, because my sun, moon, and Mercury are all in Gemini, which in this tradition means they are in the ninth house, right? And ninth house is the stage. I'm just going back to the descriptor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Houses in your metaphor were the...
The scenes that they're in.
The scenes.
Yeah.
And the scene of the ninth house is?
Higher learning, spiritual. It's the quest and adventure. So it's higher learning and travel and sort of spiritual pursuits, things that take us up, things that take us out. Whereas what's across from it is what keeps us in, where our sort of foundations are.
Great. And then now let's go back to the sun, moon, Mercury thing. Sun, in this context, what does sun cover?
So the sun is our sort of outer life, the outer expression. It's what our soul is here to do to the world, share with the world.
And so in this context, I'm just, yeah, each thing, I'm taking it and colliding it. So then you have my outward expression collides with this higher pursuit energy. And that, so then that my outward expression of self is in this context of, is in the scene of reaching for higher and expansion and higher learning.
Expansion, higher learning, travel.
Really around learning and communication too. Gemini is an air sign. So it's much more idea based than it is some of these other significations.
That checks out like you wouldn't believe.
And then also it's your inner experience, though, because your moon is also there. So
right.
Your inner sense of security, where you feel comforted, where you feel loved and are able to love, is in that same way. Like words of affirmation, we're talking about the five love languages. That would be a big thing for, I would imagine that's a big thing for you.
Yeah.
And but it's the private, the moon is the body, the private experience, the inner life, and sometimes the like childhood conditioning too, the like experience of the mother sometimes is what people would say, but it's in the house of father. So I'd say again, more not to get lost. It's just where your inner experience lives. And the sun and moon in the same sign is, it's really nice actually, because it, you know, your outer is,
means you're not in conflict with your experience.
Exactly.
Is it fair to say that sun is generally speaking father and moon is generally speaking mother, metaphorically?
Yes. In some like interpretation methods and things. Yes, that would be a thing if we were looking at those things. When we're looking at personality though, it's sort of more the outward expression versus the inner experience.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, definitely. And Katie, even though yours are very, very close, they're in different signs. They're in different signs.
Yeah. So you mean you're talking about, so my sun is Aquarius and my moon is Pisces.
Right, right. And they're both right there on the cusp, right where it changes sign, but they're super close together.
Oh, on either side of the cusp.
Yes, on either side of the cusp.
Right.
So what that would mean for you, hopefully not getting too crazy, is that the Aquarius sun, the outward expression, is very much about the other. The thing that you need to shine out on the world is about, again, it's a communication thing, but it's helping people think outside the box, helping people see things in a new way. That's very Aquarian. And then the moon in Pisces is like the most like, there's the most woo-woo spiritual, like connected divine channel kind of signification is your inner life. That's how you feel good.
Yep.
In your own body, if that makes sense.
It totally does. I'm aware. But then I have to talk about coming back to the Sag or the rising idea, but I do have this Sag rising, which how would you say words about what that does to those two?
So in Hellenistic astrology, this is sort of our reputation or the mask that is in between our sun and our moon to some degree. It's how people think of us. It may be how we want people to think of us or something we'd aspire to. What I find though amongst my clients is that it's something we have a really polarized reaction to. The good things about the sign are like, yeah, I love that. And the bad things is like, fuck that. I absolutely will not be that.
Mm.
Very like emotional response to it.
Totally.
It's like the Enneagram.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not a three. Fuck you. I'm a total three. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, and for me, that shows up as like the Sagittarian, like education, teacher, leader, straight shooter, communication. But that whole thing, Sag can be kind of tactless and like give no fucks and just come at you. And I'm like, I am healing that. I am getting over. I am not. And then the older I get, I'm like, I don't give any fucks. That's what I am. Deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. Well, then talk to me about Libra rising. We're going to jump back and forth.
Yeah. So Libra rising is, so Libras are very, it's another sort of social sign, a little bit more, I'll say superficial than Gemini, but not like that it's superficial. It's just very social and very connecting, all the things. It's about balance. It's about measured approaches to things. It also likes the finer things. It's ruled by Venus. And so it is
beauty
and adornment and music. Yeah. Music is a big thing for Libra.
Arts, beauty, music. I always think of like Vizcaya, your friends at Vizcaya looking over the water with like a glass of wine, Libra.
Oh, yes. There's a meme. I hate meme astrology, but I also love meme astrology. There is a meme that I saw recently of like this 4-car pileup, and it was like taken from a drone or something. And then all the four people that were the drivers of it are like taking a selfie together, arm in arm. Like
that's cute.
It's like, yeah, we're not going to worry about it. We're not going to, it's a very carefree kind of sign. Like let's just be comfy. Let's just enjoy each other kind of vibe.
Can I add also with Libra? I have so much to say about Libra always because I've had a lot of work to do in my life around Libra energy. I have Libra North Node.
Yeah, yeah.
And so at first I was just in a ton of resistance to Libra. I was like, all Libras are terrible and Libras are so annoying. And of course I've become everything I've judged, which is one of the main lessons of my entire life is like, the minute I judge a thing, the universe goes, okay, here you go. You're going to be that now. And I go, you're going to like professionally get paid to do the thing you're judging. And I'm like, fuck. And so then I wrestle with it and then I go, oh, acceptance. And why was I judging? Because it was me and it was a part of me I was judging. And Libra also like feelings, sensitivity and feelings, all the feelings. And it's all about relational feelings. You're how I feel about you and you and me together feeling each other. How do you feel when I say and when you say I feel? That's Libra. And I used to hate all of it. And then it like became my job.
Yeah.
And now I'm so for the listener too, like South Node versus North Node, I'd love to hear your words about it. But the gist from my perspective would be something like South Node is where we're coming from in our lives and North Node is where we're heading.
Yeah. And I would even, that's great. And I would tweak it to say it's a karmic relationship. The South Node is what we've learned already.
Mm.
And the North Node is what we are here to learn this time.
That's good.
And it's a journey that, and honestly, the rising works a little bit that way too. That there's the combination of the North Node and the rising is sort of that soul contract of what this incarnation wants to learn or be about.
Interesting. That's cool. Yeah. It's also hard. Like I don't know if you experienced this, Cass. I'd love to know what Cassidy's North Node is because I find that the North Node work is hard. The North, like learning about Libra energies when I'm an Aquarius sun, Sag rising. Now, thank God for that Pisces moon because I got all the feelings and all the sensitivity in the inner landscape, which allowed me to open my heart and my doors inside to like even coming near anything Libran. But for so long, like it took a long time and I still have to like I have to slow down, take a breath, connect with you. What do we do? Feelings, you and me, you know, like I have to try and focus. So what is Cassidy's North Node? And I want to hear how working with his North Node has been for him.
So it's really interesting because, you know, I'm a longtime listener, first time caller. So I know what you guys are talking about in your stuff last week or 2 weeks ago. You've got a conjunction with Neptune and a transiting Neptune is conjuncting your North Node right now in the sixth house. So this is Pisces for Cass.
This is Cassidy?
Yeah.
Yeah. His North Node is Pisces. So Pisces is...
Oh!
Yeah, yeah. Pisces is this deep...
Wow!
Yeah, this deep emotional feeling as it relates to health and the, like, service. The sixth house is sort of a sticky place. It's like service and servitude, illness, and, like, daily tasks and daily rituals. So finding, I would say, with Libra rising, balance in those things is sort of the... one of the soul's missions. And another thing too, I've heard you talk about the North Node as Rahu and the South Node as Ketu, which is the Vedic terms for it. And I love those significations because it's talking about the dragon. So the North Node being the head of the dragon and the South Node being the tail, the head being something that we almost compulsively hunger for. It's something that we need to learn, but we're really likely to overdo.
Huh.
Like we've got to be careful about it. Like it's always about keeping it in balance. Rahu was this being that wanted to get into the gods and drink the ambrosia. And so he wore a disguise and went in. And while he was drinking the ambrosia, sticking his neck out, they found him and caught him and beheaded him. And so the idea there being, you know, don't just compulsively go after things. Stay balanced and level. This is the path of your soul, but it's something to, you know, what I was just saying to a client was, remember, it's a journey. It's not a destination for you to just solve. It is the life's journey. It's not something you're going to solve right now. Kind of thing. Anyway, and conjunct Neptune, we're talking about just giving up drinking for a little while, which I thought was really significant.
Oh, right.
When we're talking about daily rituals and things that you need to incorporate, it was so much drink water, stop drinking alcohol, these kind of things. Barry, I was like, yeah, sure, because they're both retrograde. So it's like, go back, review your relationship too. And, you know, it's a transit, so it's not permanent, but it was,
and that also like, makes sense.
All very in keeping. Yeah.
Isn't it also kind of amazing that your North Node is Pisces? This podcast is Pisces with Aquarius Sun. That's what this podcast is. And you play the role of the skeptic who's open. So your head is heading toward Pisceanness.
Right.
Otherworldly.
But I never go all the way.
Spiritual, intuitive, psychic, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. But it's your North Node. It's like where you're heading, but it's not where you live. I love that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. And what you said just about like a constant, like that I'm headed towards things like finding regular ritual or, you know, consistency. It sounded like even like in,
yeah.
And that is something that I am in a constant struggle with and is on my mind all the time. My failure to do my shoulder exercises, for example, like I need to do my shoulder exercise. I have to, or I will be less healthy, but I don't. So, but if I go hard, if I went it all the way with it, that would also not be healthy. So like,
definitely. Yeah.
But I'm still in struggle with, that is definitely a thing I have not solved.
Well, and it's the whole life journey for you. It's not something you can solve in one lesson or teaching. It's over and over again going to be shown to you. And it's all about tweaking and moderating and getting it more refined rather than right.
Well, then where's my South mode? If we're talking about the lessons I've already learned, I'm interested in that.
Yeah. So the things that you sort of naturally, the South node is, again, what I'd say, Dharma, the things that you've already learned, you've already perfected or refined rather in a previous life.
Right.
And this is in your 12th house that we were talking about with Katie earlier, that it's that hidden place where the dark that we're afraid of, when we say we're afraid of the dark, trauma, and it's another place of service, but in terms of like fears and trauma and enemies sometimes live here. And the South Node is something that we just sort of have and we keep pulling from. We're like, yeah, but that's not a thing. I'm not doing anything. But it's really for other people in our lives, like, oh my God, but that was amazing. How did you even possibly come up with that or think of that? And it's Virgo is your 12th house.
Oh.
Yeah. So Virgo is,
yeah, that makes
more
sense.
Service indications with Virgo and doing the little thing to serve someone else without seeking recognition for it, actually being uncomfortable with recognition for those little things and those little acts of service. But that's just what you do. What do you mean? I just did this little thing. It's no big deal, but it is to other people in your life, potentially. That's what I'd say for South Node, not really even knowing you that well.
Right.
And also, isn't there something relevant in terms of his South Node being Virgo to like organization and tidiness details?
Oh, yeah.
Virgo is that part of you that goes like, not January 4th or it was the 5th and the street name was Brown. No, it was Black. Black on the 5th. No, it was Black on the 4th. Like that's that Virgo.
I might need to get that little weird thing right.
Yeah. That's that Virgo detail, organization, tidy, a little persnickety, checklists. Yes.
And it's also, no, Katie, input is the microphone, output is the headphone.
Yes.
Nope.
Yes.
You're going to want it. Nope. Click the little down arrow.
Yes.
There you go.
Thank God, because I can't do that shit. I don't have any Virgo.
Yeah. And it's also conjunct Jupiter, which is your prime benefic. Which we would say it's just one of the planets that is there to give you the most gifts or the most like good fortune set up in your personal chart. And it's, again, conjunct the South Node. So you're able to do good in the world through this like pouch that you keep pulling from that you don't realize is a big deal.
So conjunct means, tell us what conjunct means.
Conjunct means right on top of, right in the same position in the sky. And it sort of fuses the energies of whatever two bodies are at play. They're working like completely perfectly in sync and tandem and lockstep together.
Oh, I did not know that. What do squares and trines imply?
So squares are the aspect of Mars. So squares are, it's a 90 degree angle in the chart, and squares are conflict. Squares are crunchy stuff. They're hard angles. They're difficult challenges, I look at everything as a challenge or an opportunity. And it's definitely one of those challengey kind of things, where a trine is a 120 or a 60 degree angle. And it is about, it's like the Jupiter aspect. So that is gifts. That's like fortunate things just sort of falling in your lap. That's like effortless good things. A sextile is Venus's aspect. That's a 30 degree or I'm getting all the numbers wrong, but it's two signs, 60 degrees, Venus or Jupiter's 120. Anyway, the sextile is an agreement. It may not be like a gift or a thing falling in your lap, but it's that's cool. I approve of that kind of energy. Very, very nice and lighthearted. And then an opposition is when it's 180 degrees across the chart, all the way directly across. And that's a tension. That's a polarity. A yes and.
Right. Just for the listeners and for Cass, in case it's useful, I don't know, maybe you already know this, Cass, but for the listener who might not, the reason I ask about it is like in astrology, when you talk about you might say my this planet is square my other planet. The square is what I'm asking about. It's the, what is the relationship? It's a relationship in the sky between one point and another point. So when Ben says a square is not conflict, but yeah, conflict.
It no, is conflict. Tension. Yeah.
Conflict. Yeah.
Square is conflict. Yeah.
So it'd be like if your Cassidy sun is square my moon, you and I would have conflict between your personality and my inner emotional nature.
Correct. Yeah. And it's not irreconcilable. It's just being sort of aware that we've got to like make space for each other. Again, whenever I'm talking about these things with clients, I want to ask just as many questions as I do give answers, because I can tell you all the rules, but the meaning and the poetry is yours. That's, you know, the right system, the right rules create inner poetry. And I learn just as much from hearing other people talk about things as I do from what I learn in books and classes and things.
That's awesome.
I love that.
What about, can you tell us anything about, let's look at Cass and I together. Like what stands out when you look at our two charts together? Challenges or gifts?
Where's our squares?
Where's your square?
Or our trines?
Right to it.
Just to jump in, where do we fucking square? Where do we square off? Come on.
So I'll say that you have, both of your Mercuries are in what we call Holstein trine. So they are in a trine by sign. That means that your communication style feed off each other, that you are really great at talking and sharing and teaching together. kind of thing. Yeah.
If only we made a podcast.
If only. Let's see, what else do I see just right off the bat, leap off the page? Okay, we wanted to know squares. We wanted to see some
We're trying nice things too. Come on.
Nice things too. That's fine.
So let's see, how about this moon deal? Okay, so there's a bit of a square with, so communication styles, yes, they're cooperating, but there's something about that that's a little bit crunchy for Katie's moon.
Mm-hmm.
That the way that Cass wants to talk about things may be a little bit too intellectual for Katie's moon. That it wants, Katie's moon wants it to be more woo-woo and or spiritual, and but Cass's understanding and translation of it is always very intellectual. So that's, you know, that's a square.
If only we could relate to that.
If only that were actually the heart of our podcast right there.
That's true.
You've also got, this is interesting, there's a square between Cass's sun and Katie's Jupiter. So Katie's sense of fairness, really, with Jupiter and Virgo, Katie's sense of fairness and sort of your sense of balance and equanimity is sort of at odds with his ability to switch style with that sun, with that Gemini sun, the way that he can flip flop and see something from somebody's different intellectual point of view. But it's all the same. But it's all the same. No, it's both. No, it's all the same. That kind of square. If that makes
sense. That's interesting. Who's the same? He's the same. And I'm the both?
No, you're the same. You're the same and he's the both.
Right, because you don't like polarity. So you're everything on the spectrum, whereas I'm like, well, this or this.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
How cool.
Yeah.
Fuck. So it's all there, isn't it?
And it's endless, the kind of things that you can get into. Like when you were asking, when I was talking to you about the lightning storm, I was like, I don't even know. Should we bring this up in the podcast? Because I literally could do a whole session with you for an hour and just talk about that transit.
Fuck.
And that's, you know, what I do with clients, you know, so.
Yeah. I once got mad at an astrologer that I hired because I hired her to look at my birth chart and explain specific shit I had questions about with my birth chart. She spent the whole fucking hour and a half that I paid a lot of money for talking about the current transit. And I kept being like, cool, cool, cool. So, but birth chart, can we look at that? And she was like, yeah. So anyway, this transit. And I was like, wow. And then we had an argument in the middle of the session because I have channel 2838 where I am willing to fight to have my needs met.
I love it.
And I was like, excuse me, this is not, what are you talking about? I asked you to do. She was like, yeah, but what you really need is this. And I was like, you're fired. I paid you. Anyway, but my point being, that's just a side story. I imagine as an astrologer, I could understand her perspective because I imagine that when you start to really see the power of the transits, because I go through this with human design, there's your design and all the gates and channels and all those fucking centers. But then there's what's going on today and for the next 30 days and for the next 6 days that's totally influencing everything you're experiencing. So it's hard to not talk to people about the transits because you're like, yeah, 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 you're this is here and this is there. But today, do you feel like this? Here's why. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, honestly, like I'm sort of the opposite type of astrologer. I do a lot of things with birth chart and natal placement and it's something called annual profection. So there's a different house every year of your life that is a little bit more active, teaching you a little bit more things. But again, it's one of these Hellenistic traditions. We're talking about my human design. I can't remember what you said, but there's some gate of tradition that knowing what to hold on to or something and what to carry through while everybody else is trying to innovate. I'm like, yeah, but keep this is definitely the way that I approach astrology. And with that experience, with that astrologer, I would be super interested to see their chart because like, just because something is significant for me personally, I have to, as you say in your prayer, I have to remove all forms of self-centeredness in order to really meet the client.
Right.
And all astrologers are not equally good at doing that.
I know. A lot are like super self-involved. And it's like, yeah. I paid you to help my ass. That is the point of this moment. Anyway, she made me my ass.
It's really interesting, too, to hear how astrologers started their study, too. Like, you'd assume that everybody starts with their own birth chart. But one thing I've told you before is like, that was the last thing to make sense to me was my own chart. I could read everybody else's before I could read mine. And there's a lot of human design that supports that. But just really, honestly, the sun in Aquarius, that is the sun in its detriment. So that is the sun not being about self. That is the sun being about the other and talking about the other being this great place to shine. So every astrologer is going to have, and that's probably why astrology is so linked to Aquarius, is it can think outside the box from the other for the other person. But you know, every astrologer is going to have their own beef that they're bringing into it. So
yeah, it's interesting that you just made me think of this. My mother, who we don't talk at all, as everybody knows, because I feel like on this podcast, whenever I mention that I don't talk to my mom, that's when you take a drink in the drinking game. On Armchair Expert, it's whenever he says I'm an anthropology major, they have a joke about that. Anyway, my point is, she's Leo and Leo sun. And so we were always oppositional. She's directly across the thing and her whole fucking shit was all about her. And I had so many moments because that's Leo's or self, right? And I had, which is fine when it's healthy. It's just she wasn't a very healthy Leo. So like, I remember having moments when I was 8 years old thinking, why do you think that I know that about you? Like, why should I as an 8 year old be putting all my attention on your needs? And how am I supposed to psychically just know what they are? Which, of course, I did because I have Pisces moon. But she was so about herself and such a narcissist. And I was just like, who can we contribute to? How do we tell, you know, all the people, all the truths about reality so we can awaken them? And she was like, me, tell me the truths about me. Oh, you're 8? I don't care. Worship me. And I was like, I'm so confused. This doesn't work.
Yeah. And those oppositional relationships, they are simultaneously the hardest and the most, or can be the most fulfilling, because my husband is a Leo sun. And so there is in a like healthy expression, a Leo sun is actually very generous and magnanimous and expressive and creative and a great leader. And, you know, because an unhealthy Aquarius is fixated on what are they thinking about me and what are they feeling and what are they doing? And, you know, so it can balance. That opposition is the tension, but it can also balance.
That makes total sense. I can totally imagine. I've had Leo friends since then and been like, you're the best. What happened to my mom? And that's, I had to learn at a certain point, you can have a narcissistic Leo or a healthy Leo. You can have a narcissistic Aquarius or a healthy, you know, every sign can be an injured person.
And if we were going to talk about your mom, I mean, I don't know if this is too personal, but if we were going to talk about your mom from an astrological standpoint, I would start with the moon in a slightly different interpretive process, which is the moon in Pisces has no boundaries. So there is like this, it's either an overexertion of control or like no structure whatsoever or both. And so it's the ocean. So there's just no boundaries. And with an expressive Leo sun, you know, that sort of tracks is just.
That is 100,000,000% what happened. I'll give you an example. When I got into college, my college acceptance letter came while I was at school. And I was very waiting every day, waiting, waiting to see which ones I would get into. And she opened them because she couldn't wait to find out. And then she felt guilty because she knew I wouldn't like that. So she like did this whole, it was kind of adorable, actually. This is sort of a cute way to compensate for having no fucking boundaries ever. She drew fake paw prints on the envelopes as if the dog had gotten into the envelopes and that's why they were open, and left my...
And opened the envelopes.
Yeah, and left the envelopes strewn about the walkway that led to the front door of the house. So I came home and all my college letters were all over the walkway, like six of them, and they had fake paw prints on them. And I was like, and she was constantly doing shit like this, like making a cheesy joke to make up for having crossed a really fucked up inappropriate boundary. And that one is not so harmful, but it felt terrible because I didn't get to have a moment of, I find this out and I share with you. She found out because she needed to know for her, and everything was that, you know. But anyway, I don't mean this as just let's shit on Valerie Rubin. I mean it just as like, it is interesting to look at. There's that boundarylessness mixed with that Leo, the unhealthy aspect of Leo.
Yeah.
And there were plenty of lovely aspects of her Leo, including she tried really hard to be like, I'm sorry, paw prints. Cute, right? Cute. Are we good? So sweet and fucked.
And there's, you know, when we do derivative houses, which is a much more nuanced technique, but I'll probably just be confusing if I try to explain, but it puts her fifth house from your perspective in Cancer, which is again a nurturing and mother thing. So it's sort of blurred boundaries on who is supposed to be the nurturer. It's sort of the signification. And
what's the fifth house about again?
Children and creations, creativity. For me, it's almost always related to my theater pursuits or my creative pursuits, but it's the house of children, our progeny, whether that is people or things that we're doing.
Do you mind doing a quick rundown of each house and what it's about?
Yeah.
And then we'll stop putting you to work, Ben. You're just like...
We'll probably have to wrap it up. But then before we do that, I do want to say, I think we need to actually just have Ben on again and do a more of a Ben episode.
Yeah.
As well. Because I'm into this. You're great to talk to. And also, we should go into your shit at some point. But not
this
now.
Bitch, sure, this bitch yeah. is in my classes. He gets all the Ben time.
Fine.
He gets all the fucking Ben. No, of course, we'll have him back on.
I would love that. Okay, so the house is just I'll just do a quick rundown. And there are things at play always in individuals. And it, you know, really does take all the things together to make a really clear reading. But just in general, the first house is the house of self. This is the native, the person whose chart it is. It represents them. The second house.
I'm making notes.
Okay. The second house is resources. So it's often wealth, money, But it's also intangible resources, you know, assets that you have that aren't necessarily money. Creativity could be in here. Third house is one of the slightly stickier ones. It's a siblings and communication, early life learning, sort of what we first discover as the other in our life, the smaller network, if we will, in our full life. The fourth house is the home we come from and the home we make, our foundations, that kind of stuff. The fifth house is children, creativity, sex, play, pleasure, and just any kind of progeny. And all of these things are archetypes. So it's the archetype that holds all of these ideas together, if that makes any kind of sense. So it's the thing in between them. It's no word is going to land on this perfectly. It's the thing around all of this. And the sixth house is health, illness, service and servitude. Pets often show up here, actually, because they quote unquote work for us. They're in our household. What else? Sixth house, ritual, daily tasks, the minutiae of life. Then the seventh house is the other. It is, you know, directly opposite the first house. So it's, you know, the lover's card in tarot. It's the other. It's the, you know, romantic relationships, very significant business partnerships, or like your twin soul friendships, the very, very deep commitments in our lives. Eighth house is the house of debt or other people's resources, death, mental anguish. It's a tough house to be in, but it's also where my son is, and like being able to see other people's gifts comes through there often. Makes me a really good director to be an eighth house son. But anyway, so that's some of the eighth house. Ninth house is that, you know, adventure and expansion. So it's travel, spirituality, and like higher learning, those sort of pursuits. The quest, the house of the quest is another way to say that, I'd say. 10th house is all about career, vocation, public acclaim and reputation. Like the sort of, it's the zenith, it's the high point of the chart. So it's the, you know, the most, I guess I'll say, in terms of publicness. The 11th house is, you with me still, Katie? Too fast?
I'm so fast. I'm gonna keep going.
11th house is the audience, the wider network, our association, the more like broader interpretation of friendships, I would say, like acquaintances would be in here. And then the 12th house is what I call the hidden place, not my words, but the hidden place, the dark, the place where we have fears, enemies, and traumas, both real or perceived, which is really important to the 12th house, that we often fool ourselves in the 12th house.
That makes sense.
So,
yep. Whew, I think I got them all.
It's a quick little rundown.
Wow, thank you so much for that. I mean, I have a thing with astrology. It's so funny how like different, I'm just making sure I wrote down. Okay, because I did have a question actually about the 11th house before I say that thing. Isn't the 11th house also about, are there any other words you would put to that? What other words would you say about the 11th house?
Let's see.
Is it where the North Node is for everyone, or is it where my North Node is?
No, it is where your North Node is.
Audience, wider network, associations, friendships. What else?
Teamwork, allies, hopes and dreams, collaboration, maybe. Like, it honestly has got a lot of Libra to it. You know, in the modern system, which I don't really use this very often, but it's associated more with Aquarius because it's the other, you know, the group and the other, the thems.
Them, the group out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Sweet. Thank you for that. I hope that was as useful for the listener as it was for me, because I certainly need. What I was going to say is that sometimes I'll look all the houses up, and then it's one of those things in my life that for whatever reason doesn't stick in my brain. I'm like, what the fuck is the sixth house again? And I look at it and I go, right. And then 20 minutes later, I'll be like, what was the sixth house about? I can't. Yeah. But
yeah. And it's tough because there's a lot of things that sort of on the surface feel disparate and very different that are associated with some of these houses. And that's why I called up the archetype thing, is that it really is sort of this idea that holds them all. And if it's a fire or a water or an earth sign, different sort of things are going to like bubble up to the surface as being more significant. So,
yeah. Awesome. Well, again, we really put you to work. Thank you for working for us. I made a joke, but I do a lot of work with Ben. So I'm like, I'm all up in his records forever. But that doesn't help him here. So we will have you back, Ben, if you want to, and we'll get your records in.
I would love that. Yeah, that'd be great.
Once again, just for everybody, you know, what's your store called? And what's the business? What's that?
Yeah.
Do a little promo here.
So, yeah, if you're interested in booking me or something, you can go to displaycalifornia.com. If you're in Sacramento, you can look our store up and come visit us in Oak Park in Sacramento. Display California is the name of the store, at least right now. We're maybe going to change it soon. I don't know. We'll see. But it's you can book things on there. There's a whole list of different types of readings that I can do. And you can also reach out to me on Instagram. Shop Display California or Display Crystal Annex. I also am very big into the crystals and working with the astrology. And, you know, whether you're setting up an altar, you're wearing bracelets for the day or whatever it is, to sort of keep you mindful and aware of what these astrological things that you want to keep up with are. So, and I blend all of this together in my reading. So if you do a reading with me, you'll get like crystal recommendations and all these things too, you know, which you can or not use if that's not your thing. But
that's so cool. And the easiest way to book with you is through displaycalifornia.com.
Yep.
Rock on. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you so much, Ben.
You're the best.
Yeah, thank you. I had fun. I hope I wasn't too all over the place.
No, this is so much more elucidating for all these things than I've ever experienced. So I'm much clearer on how it works.
I'm so glad.
All right, doll. Thank you. I'll see you later.
Yeah. Later today.
Yeah.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye, friend.
Bye.
Jesus, what a sweetheart.
That was comprehensive. He is so good at it, isn't he?
Yeah. So good. So interesting.
So detailed. So smart.
I definitely have to go back and just listen to this episode because...
You didn't catch it.
So much came through. I was like, I got some of it.
I was taking notes the entire time on my phone. I was like, they're going to think I'm texting. But I was like, okay, this... Yeah. Awesome. Anyway. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And, you know, do your work, I guess.
Do some work.
Yeah. I love you, Cassidy.
I love you, Katie.
Aren't you proud of me? I got a new mic.
It sounds great. Yeah, it's really nice.
We love you, Desmond. I hope it's better on your ear holes. Bye.
All right, bye.
What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
I'll just narrate what she's doing. She's now taking the plastic off. The plastic is now gone, and she threw it behind her very cavalierly. She's now ripping off little bits of plastic that are still somehow attached to the headphones. Now she's pulling out the cable for the headphones, looking very studious, very intent. Now she's going to see if they'll fit on her head. I can see them. They're going on her head. They are now on her ear head.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.